Have you ever wondered why the person you love most can also make you feel the loneliest? Why the relationship that was supposed to complete you sometimes feels like your greatest burden? We've been sold a dangerous myth that true love should feel effortless, that the right person will make everything easy. But what if the very nature of love guarantees a certain amount of suffering? Not because we're doing it wrong, but because we're human. This isn't pessimism, it's liberation. When we stop expecting relationships to be perpetually blissful, we can finally build something real. Love contains a built-in paradox. We expect one person to be our best friend, passionate lover, financial partner, co-parent, therapist, and entertainment director. No job would combine so many contradictory roles, yet we demand it from marriage. When your colleague chews loudly, you tolerate it because you'll escape at day's end. When your partner does the same thing for the thousandth time, that minor irritation triggers disproportionate rage because it represents a terrifying prospect. This annoyance will persist forever. We're often kindest to people who matter least, maintaining perfect politeness with strangers who can't wound us deeply. But with our partners, where vulnerability runs deepest, we unleash our worst selves, slamming doors, resurrecting ancient grievances, deploying the silent treatment. We feel safe enough to be horrible because we trust they won't leave. The security of commitment creates the very conditions for behavior that undermines it. This isn't a personal failing, it's a design flaw in how we've structured modern relationships. When relationships falter, we torture ourselves wondering if we chose wrong, imagining alternate lives with people we passed over. But this regret assumes we exercised meaningful freedom, a fiction that ignores powerful constraints we barely acknowledge. Most of us weren't calmly selecting from abundant options, but desperately filling an urgent emotional void. Modern society makes singlehood unbearably isolating, and we're psychologically drawn to the wrong people because we seek familiarity, not happiness. If childhood taught us that love comes with control or emotional abandonment, we'll reject healthy candidates as boring while gravitating toward those who frustrate us in hauntingly familiar ways. Geographic limitations, social circles, economic factors, and timing severely restricted our actual choices. The fantasy that we could have chosen anyone from billions torments us unnecessarily. We didn't choose freely, we chose from a handful of options while constrained by psychological warps we barely understood. The question isn't whether we could have chosen better, but whether we can make something meaningful with the choice we did make. Every relationship begins with a crush, that intoxicating moment when a few tantalizing details convince us we've found our soulmate. From absurdly limited information, we construct elaborate fantasies of lifelong happiness. Here's the uncomfortable truth. Everyone has something substantially wrong with them once fully known. Life deforms us through childhood, education, work, and past relationships. Our fears manifest as defensiveness, clinginess, avoidance, or passive aggression. When disappointment inevitably arrives, we feel uniquely betrayed. But this isn't deception, it's simply the inevitable unfolding of complete humanity. We knew a fragment and mistook it for the whole. Dating resembles a job interview, where both parties highlight strengths and conceal weaknesses. Every human will frustrate and disappoint us, and we'll do the same to them. Choosing a partner isn't escaping grief altogether, it's merely identifying a kind of misery we can bear. The question isn't whether someone has flaws, but whether their particular imperfections are ones we can tolerate year after year. When we stop asking, "Why aren't you perfect?" and start asking, "Can we build something worthwhile with the imperfect materials we both bring?" we finally begin the real work of love. Romantic literature ends with marriage rather than beginning there, skipping the decades where relationships actually unfold. Novels never show heroes ironing underpants or discussing whose turn it is to buy toilet paper. A seemingly trivial omission that profoundly misleads us about love's daily reality. The domestic realm is systematically neglected in romantic culture as unworthy of intelligent attention. Yet these supposedly minor matters often determine relationship satisfaction more than grand gestures. More marriages end over unwashed dishes than infidelity. Without recognizing domestic challenges as prestigious problems worthy of patience, we fall into destructive patterns of nagging and shirking. Domestic preoccupation isn't the death of love, but what happens when love succeeds, when we create shared spaces that require maintenance, when we build lives intertwined enough to generate mutual responsibilities. True romance doesn't transcend domesticity, it transforms it into a sacred practice of care. The couples who last navigate these conflicts with humor, perspective, and mutual respect. The laundry never disappears, but our resentment about it might. Modern relationships pursue an ambitious ideal, great sex with someone we love for as long as we live. While people throughout history have desired passionate sex, loving partnerships, and long-term stability, our distinctive folly is believing we can secure all three simultaneously. Previous generations more wisely assumed only two could coexist: passionate sex with someone beloved but briefly, regular great sex over time but without love, or cozy long-term love but without great sex. Spousal values fundamentally oppose erotic values. Daily relationships require clear boundaries and expressed needs. Satisfying sex demands surrender, vulnerability, and boundary dissolution. The qualities that make someone an excellent life partner, reliability, consistency, practicality, often conflict with what ignites desire, mystery, unpredictability, even slight danger. Neither open relationships nor lifelong monogamy offer pain-free solutions. The former triggers possessiveness, the latter brings suffocation. When we stop expecting perfect sexual fulfillment alongside perfect emotional connection for decades, we can appreciate what is possible: moments of genuine connection, periods of satisfaction, compromises that honor both partners' needs, imperfectly but adequately. When relationships feel difficult, we often complain love is too hard. This frustration stems from a damaging belief that love is merely a feeling, not a skill requiring development. We wouldn't expect to play piano beautifully without lessons, yet we expect to love well without education. Successful love requires specific competencies. Understanding how our past shapes partner selection, forgiving failure, determining needs through observation, managing domestic issues fairly, and accepting our sexuality's complexity. This skill-based approach transforms difficulties into growth opportunities. Arguments become chances to develop better communication. Differences in desire become invitations to deeper understanding. The most successful couples aren't those with perpetual passion, but those who approach love as a craft requiring patience and practice. Understanding love's inevitable sorrows doesn't mean staying in abusive or fundamentally incompatible partnerships. If troubles stem from life itself rather than your partner, stay. You're encountering existence's misery with someone, not because of them. But if your partner is abusive or consistently dismissive, leaving may be wiser. The most mature love acknowledges both joys and sorrows without surprise, recognizing disappointment as inevitable. Accepting love's difficulties opens us to deeper connection, one based not on fantasy, but on two imperfect humans choosing to face life's challenges together.